This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong, and today is a special show where you'll be listening to the highlights of our 21st BFM Network Series event, where Azran Osman Rani of Naluri Hidup, Yo Chen Chow of Fave, and Annabelle Komartinen of La Jusuria discuss how they took their brands from startup to scale up. I'll let Frida take it away.
When talk about startup to scale up, everybody thinks about funding, but that's not all there is, right? What actually should be the first thing that they have to think about?
If you talk to any of us, it's a lonely, long journey, right? Lots of ups and downs. And I think a lot of mental strength is where that matters, right? A lot of times, like days before fundraising, the cash balance is going down and down. So I think a lot of it is why you'd really want to do that.
What I've learned across all these different industries is the one common factor is it's too scary to do it yourself. And so you've got to find people who have really, really deep industry experience. Find people with that background who can go through this journey together, because it's almost impossible to do it by yourself.
So when I started a brand 5 years ago in the kitchen, I didn't really think how much I needed to grow. All I had is the end in mind, which is I'm here in my little kitchen. I have a little formula. I want to make Malaysians healthy. I know it will work. And you know what? One day my dream is to become Starbucks. I took it. I went and talked about my idea to every person I could talk to. That's how I found my business partner. So true that having a partner in this lonely road is one of the best things that ever happened to me. And if you do find that magic partnership, it makes you forget about the funding. It's all about tomorrow. It's about the sales. It's about how do I make more Malaysians healthy? If I made it online and touch 10 people, what if I had a store? What if I have two stores? So that's how it kind of happened. And I never really planned like, hey, guys, we need 50,000 or 100,000. So all I thought about was, I have a product, I have a great idea, and I'm going to go out there and do it.
Alluding to your point about how, you know, you have experts around you and all of you have partners, are these necessary?
All of us, right, we all have our strength and definitely have a lot of gaps, right? And I think in my this journey, let's say example, talk of fundraising, Joe's job is to charm and date and whatever. When they say, I do, my job starts, right? And then that's when to turn that I do into a whole agreement and sign and they come out, right? So that's where we connect and complement.
For you, Azran, and you know, with all the different startups you've been involved in, what did you see in that? What was driving you?
I'm going to start with what Chen Chao brought up, which is the obsession with the problem that you're trying to solve. And that's why I think one important ingredient that we really need to have, especially with the partners that you choose, is that really deep sense of obsession with the problem, but more importantly, the curiosity to explore. And that's what makes someone like Moses incredibly unique, because despite 36 years in an industry that's very set in its ways, he was very, very open-minded, right? My job was to be the five-year-old kindergarten kid who asks why, and he would patiently answer every single thing. And when I throw an idea, he doesn't say, no, it cannot be done. He says, well, if you need to do that, if you want to do that, you have to address this. And that's very helpful. That is an insight that as an outsider, I will never be able to have. But he frames it as, you know, what is the thing that we've got to solve if you want to achieve that? And that's why I think having that both industry expertise combined with a deep sense of curiosity for new things that are, you know, don't yet exist.
I know when we first talked, Annabelle, you were like, I just want that one shop. Is it okay not to scale up?
I think that everyone just needs to be clear on how much you want to gamble, how far you want to go. Back then, all I wanted was one shop. The scale up happened because people were coming and putting their money. So that's when you as an entrepreneur have the gut feel that, you know what, let's hire one more. Let's get one more location. It was never about, you know what, I want 10 stores this year. It was about, where did the need come from? Where do people say, can you please open in our neighborhood? And you kind of listen to what people say. So scaling up is really how you see your customers coming. How do you see you serving that neighborhood? So for me, don't force it, but be prepared. Because every scale up we do, it means another round of funding. It means burning more cash. And growing means making your revenue or whatever that you want to reap the benefit, it will be later and later on.
With your scale-up journey and there's funding, right, and there's investors that you have to report to, how much of that time frame was forced on you? Did the roadmap change? Did you have to change things because now they put money?
So I'm going to try to take that in two parts. I think first, it's very interesting the contrast between AirAsiaX and iFlix on one hand and Nelluri on the other. In the first, the imperative to scale up fast was because the business was all about network economics. And network economics basically means you need to have, the more points you have, the more value the overall business, right? So if I only had one flight, you know, when we started, we only had one plane flying to the Gold Coast. If there's only one destination, how many times a year are going to have a holiday in the Gold Coast? So you needed to have more destination. And the second destination, you know, Hangzhou was deliberate because it was not about Hangzhou KL or Gold Coast KL, but it was also about Hangzhou KL Gold Coast. And so the importance of creating more network spokes created more value to the other points. Similarly with iFlix, the real value for iFlix is the more people watch, the more data you're going to be able to collect. So one is networks. The other is if the business is all about data insights, you need to have that is the advantage. And so acceleration becomes important. That's not necessarily the case at Nelluri. Because for us, it's not important to scale early on. It's important that we really solve a problem. And it may be a very small problem, right? So in our case, we have to make sure we're not here to try to solve and make everyone healthy, but it's very specific slivers. People who are struggling with health, physical chronic illnesses, especially heart diseases, due to mental health problems. So it's very quite focused. And we've got to iterate that many, many times, get it right. And if we get it right, then we can start to scale to other adjacencies. But we can't do it until we get that first core right.
Now, your businesses, obviously, the first two of you, is very much using technology as the basis of your growth as well. Now, for you, Annabelle, you know, how has technology played a role in scaling up your business?
At the beginning, we were an online shop. We had no physical store. So even though we had no advertising money, zero, we used products to give to influencers. And then that just really turbo boosted our brand. After that, we started to have stores. And with stores, you need POS systems. And that's where technology came to play. The more you grow, the more you realize you're out of control. Because two stores become three, three become four. Suddenly, you have four locations with an end-of-day sales. How much was cash? How much was this and that? So we changed three times our POS. So that's the technology part. And because we were able to change to the right technology, now what we're using is something that's on the cloud. Now with the cloud, we can check our sales as of this minute by outlet, by location, by hour, by product. And more innovations are coming out. So I have meetings with HR solution apps because now we have 200 plus employees and I need to track all of them, their leaves, their forms, their whatever. So embrace it in any business that you do. If you have the chance to invest and look into it, it's cheaper than before. So really, we're very blessed in today's time.
Is it also your background working in all these technology companies, appreciating it? Because a lot of people will think of it as a cost, and you probably look at it as an investment.
Yes, I agree, because technology has a way of turbo-boosting businesses. But a lot of SMEs, we think that, oh, no, how much per month? How much is it? But when you reach a point of you want to grow, without these tools, don't expect that humanly it's possible to track or to make your employees happy or to make customers happy or to grow partnerships with big people. Go out there and find out what people use. And the best ever advice I can give is go and ask fellow SMEs. Whatever you're about to implement, always ask for references. And that's what I do now with any tech, because once you're in, it's hard to get out and it's an investment.
My rule is if you're doing the same thing five times, you've got to find a way of automating it or delegating it.
I want to come back to mindset again, right? As people are going to businesses, is everybody geared to scale up? What is that one thing that you've been in so many businesses, you know, and now and all that? What is that one thing where you can ask yourself, yes, I am ready to take this on a higher scale?
I'm driven by, are people happy with the solutions that we're offering, right? And until we get that right, let's not try to rush and serve too many people. So it's when people tell us, not when we decide we're ready to scale, but when people say, wow, right? If you've really made a difference in people's lives, then you're ready to make a difference in more people's lives.
A lot of time during different stages as well, we go through learn, unlearn, relearn. In the last 2 years, we built from zero to about 100 plus million US dollars, so 500 million ringgit business. Now, how do we take this business, 100 plus million US dollar business, in the next 2 years to 1 billion US dollar business? And what it takes us to get to this point will not take us to that point. And I think a lot of it is not what to do. It's not even how to do, but why. For all the businesses that we work with, do we bring impact? If we can't, we're irrelevant. So a lot of it is thinking outside the box. Like small businesses, 1, 2, 3 outlets that need a loan. Today we can connect for them and get a loan. So a lot of it is thinking out of the box and how do we solve the problem?
I agree that as long as customers are excited and are willing to pay for your product or service, that's when you know you can scale. So then you start to become confident that, okay, this formula works, and you start to go back and see how you can deliver the same experience on 5 locations with the same food and the same standard.
All right, and on that point, it's time for a short break for some music, but afterwards, we'll be hearing more from Azran Osran Rani of Naluri Hidup, Yo Chen Chow of Fave, and Annabelle Komartinen of the Juiceria, all about taking their businesses from startup to scale up. Stay tuned.
Breakfast for Masters, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong, and you're listening to the highlights of our 21st BFM Network Series event titled From Startup to Scale Up. We've been listening to how Azran Osman Rani of Naluri Hidup, Yo Chen Chow of Fave, and Annabelle Komartinen of La Juiceria have approached time, technology, and thoughts when it comes to scaling up. But now let's hear what they have to say about talent.
That journey to scale up, talent. What sort of talent are you looking for in that journey, the right talent?
So I'm obsessed about being very systematic on hiring people. You've got to predefine what your criteria is. And this is where I think there's a big gap with a lot of organizations, because at the point that you hire, you at best, maybe 50 to 60% accurate, no matter how good your interviewing technique is. But actually, within three months of them joining you, you are now 95% sure whether they are a good fit or not. But most people don't go back and look at, okay, well, if I had a consistent rating of what are the predictors of good performance, what turns out, you know, what would be the good predictors? And clearly, things like academic performance and past employers, they're not good predictors. Interestingly, if you look at it objectively, and I think it may vary for different cultures, even passion is not a good predictor of success. Curiosity, though, is. Humility is. But what are the specific ways you're going to assess these things? And if they are, how do we keep tweaking it so that we're going to get better and better and better at hiring so that we have a machine? Because otherwise, it becomes very impromptu. Today, I'm very focused on marketing. I see a candidate who's very outspoken. I'm immediately gravitated to that person. Today, I'm focused on doing my financial reports. This person looks analytical. I want him on the team. And 3 months from now, you're going to regret that, right? So it's putting in place a structured system so that you are not the only person hiring. You know, everyone has a formula of hiring.
For F&B, it's a little bit different. You don't have a lot of time to assess because you got a restaurant to open, you got cafes, and you got to run it. So one thing I learned from my partner was that as we, you know how entrepreneurs are, right? You jump off the plane and you start building your parachute along the way coming down. So you don't have to figure out everything on your own. You can always hire other people who have gone through it, to kind of learn from them and get your company up and running faster. And because of your employees and the time that they give and the effort that they give, you feel compelled to grow. To grow together with people who trust, customers who trust your brand, employees who gave their time and quit their jobs to come and follow you, and they really believe that you can grow. And so that's my responsibility, to keep growing as we can with the right group of people who will invest.
Thank you. We'll open the floor for questions. Yes, all right.
I am completely lost with technology. I've come over to Malaysia, set up my own training consultancy business, and really what I want to do is monetize what is in my head, put it onto a website and set up courses. And what's happened is, trying to actually understand the technology, I have completely got lost in actually figuring out the systems and the processes I need for technology to help me. So help me out, please.
So I guess the question is, like, you know, where does he start now? You know, it's a whole new journey.
Good question, right? I think a lot of it is how to find the simple solutions. And any problem that we face, someone in the world actually faced that problem. And a lot of time is try to Google out what is a good solution that someone has used. And let's say, to be honest, as we build up faith, a lot of times when I want to look at what tools they use, our team will go and ask what iFlix use, what Grab use. And if those people have decided on that, they've done a lot of research, I will use that, right? Right. So that's how we actually, a lot of time, that's how we choose. Because I won't know best, right? But these people, the bigger companies, would have done their research and study. And of course, we choose type of company that's similar to your DNA. But different company may choose a different style, right? Like, a lot of times, those big brands, kind of mainframe or whatnot, that call me with hundreds of thousands, we'll never spend that. I think what Annabelle mentioned, right? I think, like, a lot of it's like looking at a easier way. And a lot of time, it's choosing something that's easy, simple. And let's say, turn the other way, like, I say, as we today provide solutions for, let's say, restaurants. Let's say, take a stamp card. Back then, you need to design a stamp card and you do stamp. I think what we decided to do is turn it digital, and how to do is eventually just ask a simple 3-4 questions. How many stamps you want? How many box you want in a stamp card? So let's say 8. Which stamp you want to give a freebie? Stamp 3, stamp 6, stamp 8. What freebie you want to give? Put these 3. 3 minutes later, you can run a stamp card already. So a lot of it is turning those complex things into super simple that others can do. And I think that's what Facebook does. For Google does, right? Back then, if you want advertising, the big four A agencies, you go and talk to them, and it's a complex advertising. Today, any Blogspot or anyone can advertise on Facebook easily. And I think it's turning that and simplify it. And a lot of it is, if you find a solution that you don't understand, don't use that. Find others that is easier.
What happens if you find out in 3 months' time they're not the right fit? What do you do? Groom them or let them go?
I would look at, like, one is on the motivation and one is on skills. If the person is motivated and skilled, you empower them and let them be. If they are motivated but not skilled, you try to coach them. If they are skilled, not motivated, you try to see whether you can inspire them. If they are not motivated, not skilled, then let's not waste the time, right? Because a lot of time also, the time that you spend with the underperformer is also the time that you've taken away from your top performance.
If you ask someone, what do they do outside of work, right? And actually, it doesn't matter what the answer is. But what really counts is the follow-up question, which is, when was the last time they did it? And just kind of see how they talk about it. I'll give you two examples. Someone says, oh, I play tennis. When's the last time you played? 3 months ago? Versus someone who says, I play tennis. Well, you know, when's the last time you played? What do you like about it? And they just start talking about, well, you know, last Saturday I've been really working on this whole top spin and the tensile strength of my racket and how it affects that top spin. That level of obsession is going to show up in work, right? Just kind of seeing how much they're into what they say they're into is a very interesting predictor of that motivational axis.
So talking about partnerships, is it advisable to go into business with friends and family?
So the key is, can you get into all the fights and you can solve it? I mean, have you seen couples work? Have you seen siblings make it work? They are. Best friends make it work? They are. But if you've seen those that fail, there's a lot of that. I think in the end, is how do you handle it? Are you mature enough to work together? Are you not mature enough to work together, right? And I think that would be, there's no perfect answer I would want to argue. But a lot of it is, would you mind to sacrifice that friendship or relationships if that failed? Will both of you be able to separate that or not?
I just want to add a slightly different twist to this, which is it's an incredibly lonely journey being at the top. And we need a lot of feedback in that process, and we need a lot of support, especially emotional support, because there will be many times when it's down. And the problem with friends and family is that they tend to be very prescriptive. You should do this. Go see this, you know? And that's actually not very helpful, right? And so, for example, for me, over the last 10 years, I have a peer support group of fellow CEOs. We meet once a month, roughly 10 months out of a year. And it's a very structured process. We don't tell people what to do. We listen and we share experiences. And that's important because it allows you to reflect and learn through peer groups. And when you hear stories of how other people struggle, it helps you to say, okay, look, I'm not crazy, I'm not alone, right? And that's really, really important. And friends and family, I find, just can't do that because they're not objective and they tend to be prescriptive.
Just want to ask, what's the most creative way you have for hiring talent?
Just very quickly, three parts, right? First, how do you market and get the right people? And rule number one is people who are good that you want on your team are not the people who are going to respond to job ads. The people who will kind of write in if you put a job ad, the people, you know, the great people are not looking for jobs. So you got to figure out, how do I know who's out there who's good, and figure out how do I attract them? So I don't believe in really job ads and people applying. The second, of course, is the whole interviewing and selection process. I'm different. I don't have one solution. I take a very data-driven approach. What's my list of questions? I've got to ask the same questions. I've got to rate people. 3 months later, what's the feedback loop to know whether they're good or bad? But the third point, which is very, very crucial, that I think a lot of people don't spend enough time, is onboarding, right? Where at that point of 3 months, interestingly, I find half the time when someone doesn't work is because we didn't onboard them well. We didn't tell them about the decision process, how things work here. People come in with that experiences. So one of the things I did, by the way, in the spirit of scaling up, is I wrote a user guide on Azran. How to work with Azran. You have to write that down. Because otherwise, you know, it takes, you know, to understand me could take more than 3 months, right? So I need to shortcut that process. So you want to know, like, how easy or difficult it is to work with me? Read my user guide. So onboarding is an important part. If you don't do that right, you can hire the best people, you can select them well, but there's still a 50% chance they're going to fail in your company.
Coming from mostly American companies in corporate, one of the things I appreciated the most working back in Manila and in KL was empowerment. That empowerment makes them appreciate that you trust them and that there's that responsibility, and make sure that they're very clear. You don't overstep on that.
And that was our highlight reel of our 21st BFM Network Series event with Azran Osman Rani of Naluri Hidup, Yeo Chen Chow of Fave, and Annabelle Komartinen of La Juiceria, discussing From Startup to Scale Up. I'm Christine Wong, and you've been listening to Enterprise on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned for Resource Center coming up at 11 a.m.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.